Welcome to the Israel Answers series, connecting Israel, the Bible, and you. Join Susan Michael as she explores timely issues and current events from a scriptural perspective to equip the Christian world with a balanced and biblical response. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, which will ignite your faith and bring the Bible to life in your everyday world. Now, let's join Susan with your Israel Answers.
We're here at the 2025 National Religious Broadcasters Convention, and we have run in today to a couple of great friends from Israel. The ICEJ has known both of them and their families for many years, and they have become celebrities on TVN.
Heaven forbid.
So I want to introduce, I have with us Yair Pinto, who is the Director of Operations for TVN Israel.
TVN Israel, yeah.
And then we have Matti Fachani, who is the CEO of Sar El Media. It's very interconnected, TVN and Sar El Media. We won't worry about explaining.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. And really, you've become celebrities. And a lot of it is because right after October the 7th, when the war began, particularly you, Yair, I saw you all of a sudden right there on site, Sometimes in your army fatigues, and telling us what was going on right then at the moment. And I know that you got a really large following out of that.
Yeah, so what happened was that October 7th start, and suddenly, you know, rockets, everybody needs to go to defend the country, because in Israel, everybody goes to the IDF for, you know, 2 years if you're a woman or 3 years if you're a man. And then you stay part of the IDF until you're 40. Now it's until you're 50. And, you know, now Matti will stay forever in the IDF.
It feels like it's forever at this point.
and the part that I realized is, okay, so Israel is winning this war on the physical side. We have a strong army and we've defeated Hezbollah. We're almost defeating Hamas. We've defeated the, you know, Iranian attacks against us. So Baruch Hashem, thank God, on the military side, we're winning. But on the side of sharing the truth and the information that is going from Israel to the world, we're losing. For some reason, this terrorist organization, Hamas, that murdered, kidnapped, still holds hostages in the Gaza Strip and firing rockets at us for more than 20 years, they are perceived as the good guys, and university students all across the Western world are supporting this terrorist organization. So that was like the driving force behind the beginning stages. I thought, okay, I'm here, I'm joining the army, I believe in Jesus, and I need to share with the world what's happening so that people will know how to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So it just started with a phone every day of like, okay, I'm sharing my feelings and what's happening in the war, in the ground, and I don't know how, but it grew and grew and grew, and now we have 1,150,000 followers on YouTube. So it's kind of like crazy how really God, you know, multiplied his blessing. And Matti is now in another round of reserve duty. He actually got 4 days off his army. I hope his commander doesn't see him on this video. So that he's having fun while everybody is in the mud in Judea and Samaria. But we're here because we think this is also a front that we should be fighting as Israelis, as followers of Yeshua.
I want to add to that. One, I think Yair, there's another member of our team, Tomer, who really, with the, what is the expression? So the flag carriers, when it comes to like, we just have to do this however it's done, because we always, myself included, it always had to be perfect in the past. And you realize that that's a thing of the past nowadays. The thing to do is, it just has to be out there, it has to be fresh, it has to be honest, and it doesn't really matter if it's perfectly done or not. We even joke internally that the worse we look on camera, the worse the production
quality. The more it's authentic. So sometimes we are out of focus, but then the video gets 800,000 views and stuff like that. It's like, it's
weird. Sometimes we have technical issues during live broadcasts, and it still has the same number of views. Technical issues to the point where it's just like glitching the whole time. Anyway, but to your question, I think audiences since October 7th, really woke up to this new paradigm that they weren't aware of in the past, which was, I think people would watch television and they'd think, myself included, by the way, look, each one of them is sort of right, and this guy goes a little this direction, and this guy goes the other direction. ICJ, for instance, did a great job of trying to, like, to highlight the truth about the facts. But here's the problem. There is no middle ground with the truth. And people, I think, just woke up to this. And again, I'm not saying other people. Myself included, and many people on our team, we realized, like, during the war, it's like, this isn't a debate over, like, the gray area. There's one side, to Yael's point, that openly lies about everything.
Yeah.
They falsify the facts, the events. They, you know, they focus in visually on one event that completely excludes the bigger picture. And they lie. They lie day and night about everything and about everyone. And everything they say is deceitful and evil. And then there's another side that usually tells the truth. And it sometimes might be a little skewed, but at least they're telling the truth. And for us, I think that was the big thing that the audience responded to, is they wanted unbiased. It wasn't filtered. There was no, like, now we're going to tell you why this is important, stuff like this. This is what happened.
Yeah. This and, is what I experienced.
Yeah, by the way,
what happened, yeah.
We're here experiencing this on the ground. That's why people strongly responded to it. So I think it's not just us. It's a trend within the audience where people say, COVID, I think, was a trigger for this. We don't trust in the institutions in the way that we did in the past because we've realized not everyone tells us the truth even when we think they are. And then they say, wait a minute, these big names that we used to follow, they've fallen for various reasons, some whatever, I won't go into that. And then they're looking for someone's like, at least it seems like these guys are telling the truth. And then it's not just us, it's met several others, by the way, where they gravitate towards them. And they're like, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, there's a spelling error and the graphics are wrong, but at least I know this guy's telling me the truth.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you can maybe tell, I have an Israeli accent and not like a Native American speaker, but that is something I think that really resonated well with the audience. And I think this is really a testament and an encouragement to basically all the people that watch us, that if you do one step in basically, I don't know, following God's will, then His ability to multiply that and really take you to the next level to reach stuff that you had no clue you will reach. I mean, at the beginning was just with an iPhone filming day after day and getting these phone calls from Tomer, our director, saying that, I know you're tired, Yair, but we need an update today. You have to go and do an update. You wake up from your sleeping bag in the army in Gaza and do another update. And that's what we did. And then it grew and it grew. And God used that not just to share the truth with the world, but also towards the soldiers that were fighting in Israel. Because they would see like me filming in English and they say, what are you doing? Who are you filming this for? And I said, millions of Christians around the world are praying for you guys. And they thought, what? Really? I thought the whole world is against us. Because that's all they knew. All the hatred, all the anti-Semitic protests, pro-Hamas demonstrations. And then suddenly there is like another wave of Bible-believing Christians that prayed and supported and stands with Israel. And that was like super encouraging for my fellow soldiers, especially in the Gaza Strip in the beginning days of this war where we felt super alone.
I want to compliment you, Susan, and I think also some of the staff of ICJ, Jürgen, Barry, David, people that for many, many years have been sort of like preaching to an audience that like very slowly picked up on it. The war was a moment where the fact that you were educating an audience to love Israel, but through the facts, not just like because we're saying so.
Right.
Through the facts, it bore fruit. Huge fruit, by the way. In a sense, I think Israeli people, for the first time, the idea of evangelical love for Israel went from being an idea, from a vague idea, to being something that they fully understand.
What did you say? Talking so good to see you.
We're in a problematic... We're in a problematic position where everyone who walks by says hi now. We're in the middle of rolling, brother. I'm sorry.
But I will say the last person that stopped by was an executive from TBN.
I know, talk to me. Anyway, so to your point, so this is you guys, and I say this is a huge compliment, for decades, investing in training leaders, you know, the sign behind you, training up Christian leaders, And like, it seems like, oh, you know, when are we going to see the fruit of it? This war was that moment of fruit where the Israelis, the Jewish people in Israel, the idea of like evangelical support went from an idea that people talked about to a reality that they experienced on the ground. And that, I think, I mean, there's a lot of good that came out of this war. Don't get me wrong, but that was a big thing where like it really shifted the way people talk about it.
You say a lot of good came out of this war?
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. In short, I'm saying about this myself. This was personally probably the worst year of my life. Also the best year of my life at the same time.
Weird combination.
Yes.
Very weird combination of good and bad. But I think that's really encouraging. It really shows that out of the most challenging years of my life in Israel, and I think of the nation of Israel at large, God proved that he's faithful. You know, despite everything, we see breakthroughs in many, many areas. And Mati also can share, you know, a few of them. I would say one of them was this clear distinction between good and evil, which was very gray before this war. I think worldwide, God used this to prove there is good, there is bad. You need to choose. Are you standing with me or with the enemy?
Yeah, and to make it really specific, if you look at Israeli society,
it
was a moment of awakening back to the big question of, I always frame this, humanity is always every day answering just two questions. Who am I? Why am I here? And this war was a reminder for the people of Israel of both of those questions. Who am I? You're these people, and you're these people because those people oppose you. And why am I here? That answer, that question was also strongly sharpened in the sense that you now know what you're fighting for. And if people that don't have anything to fight for have no cause to live. So that was a moment of awakening. The second thing is, and this is not my thought, this is Micha Goodman, as I was reading on the plane on the way over, just if you were wondering if I was paying attention or not.
I thought that you that you thought about it before him.
This is my next idea. So the next idea he says is every generation, if you really want to hold on to the revelation of something, it only lasts for about two generations. And it's always the pioneer generation that has the full revelation of what needs to be done sacrifice-wise, what needs to be done as far as like the hardship goes that goes with it. And so Israel, for the first 80 years, you have the remembrance of what it was to be without a nation. And then we lost that in the last years. Myself included, by the way, I'm a person, you know, I understand scripture, I understand prophecy. I forgot, and many other Israelis forgot how much we need to fight for what God promised. And this war, as terrible as I was in that, you know, the hardship on a human level, on a national level, it's terrible. But it also was a reset button on going back to being a pioneer generation. A generation that knows what it looks like to fear not having a nation of your own. A generation that can remember what it looks like to fight for God's promise. And when you have that, that is a memory and a mindset that lasts for several generations to come.
Wow.
So that is a gift that you can't buy. It only comes through pain and through suffering. So we've been given that by our enemies, a brutal reminder of why we're in this nation, or we're in Texas right now, but why we're in Israel, why we're in Israel, what we're supposed to do.
In the second holy land,
yeah. Texas. Yeah. In the nation that loves Israel at least as much as Israel does.
Yeah.
So, Matthew, were you born in Israel?
Yeah, born and raised in Israel.
The accent, yes.
You're saying I don't have an American accent?
Yeah, by the way, pretends he has Oxford English. He uses the Hebrew accent for camera. No, jokes aside.
By the way, Mati is originally from Iran. His family is from Persia.
100 years ago, yeah. My English is my mother tongue. My mother is originally from the U.S. Also, I've been working in English for, I don't know, 20 years at this point, so it's stuck. Yeah.
So I want to take a minute to talk about your personal backgrounds.
Sure.
I think that's very interesting for our listening. So tell us about your growing up in Israel and how you became a believer and what that means for you serving in the army.
Well, a lot of questions.
45 seconds.
So, you know, in Israel, not many people believe in Jesus. Not many Jewish people believe in Jesus. Actually, the statistics are something like 0.001%. Oh, wait, we grew?
0.02.
Okay.
30,000 out of 6 million.
Anyway.
0.02.
Okay, now you killed our audience with your math. Just kidding. But
we're getting the facts. Yeah.
Anyway, So growing up, I was always the only believer in my school, in my grade, the only believer in my basketball team.
Family, were believers? You grew up as a believer?
Yes, I grew up as a believer because my mother, after the army, went outside of Israel like all Israelis do after they finish army, and she met a group of white women that shared about Jesus. She was the first one in our family that became and accepted Jesus in her heart. Of course, everybody thought she's crazy. But then she met my father at the congregation in Jerusalem, and we were born. But, you know, it's not something that you just are born into. At a certain age, for me, it was around 15. I had to make a decision for myself to really accept Jesus into my heart and to walk with him in faith. But it's also a journey. There's like ups and downs in life. And for me, I think the biggest step of faith that I took was in the army. Because before the army, I was kind of ashamed in my faith. I didn't share with my friends that I believe in Jesus. And when they found out, they wouldn't speak to me for a few months. Like, really. Like, my best friends wouldn't speak to me for a few months because, mainly because I hid it from them and they didn't, you know, they didn't know about it at all. So, but then they, you know, they forgave me. We're best friends until today. But in the army, I thought, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to read my Bible every day in the evening on my bunk bed with the New Testament. You know, it's because the Bible is the New Testament.
Right.
And, you know, reading the Bible is a normal thing in Israel. But with the New Testament, it's like an addition. And I shared that I'm believing in Jesus. And I'm a Jew who believes in Jesus. And I was the only Jew in my military unit who believes in Jesus. And that opened doors to share and conversations. And they respected me for who I was.
Very good.
And for not being ashamed.
Yes.
So this has really been something that I learned. And I hope that all of you, wherever you are in your work, in your family, in your communities, don't be ashamed. Because if you're proud in what you believe, people will be envy. They will have questions. And they will want to know more about what you believe. And at the end, I mean, if you're a good person, you walk with God, then his light will shine through you, and that will attract more people to come to the Lord.
Very good.
I have more to speak, but I think my 45 seconds are off.
You're as bad with time as I am.
It's your two famous personalities. They want to know about your background.
Bati used to have hair once upon a time.
A lot of it. Now it's migrated off my head. Anyway, but to your point, one, I have a problem with the word famous. Because and this isn't like a personal issue. It's my desire always has been and is that people hear the truth about what happens in the world. And if I can help get a message across that is somewhat holistic, or at least challenges someone's sort of notions about the way the world clicks and works, I've done what I'm supposed to do. It's not personal, and I honestly dislike the idea of it like being a personal thing. I want to be a tool and a team, and we have an amazing team of people that helps share the truth and helps others share the truth about what happens in Israel. Because much of what we do is not just through the YouTube channel that people know us from, it's through many, many other ministries that we've helped over the years. I want to set the record straight on that. Two, on a personal note, to make this very, very short, I was born to two believing parents. They're both first-generation Messianic Jews, which is very common. My father's a Jew from Persian descent, third and fourth or fifth, depends how you count, generation in Israel. My mother's an American-born Jew who immigrated to Israel. I left what we would call the Messianic faith during my military service, a little before and then a little after. Came back only around age 24 to that faith. And I grew up with it as it was like my own thing. Left it because I needed to like come back and decide that it was my personal faith, not someone else's faith.
Right.
It's a whole long story. And it's, by the way, not very rare in the Messianic community, but also not rare in most believing communities.
Second generations.
Yeah, second generation need to find it for themselves or they lose it. Or it gets, in many cases, sort of like watered down because you don't have like the burning, again, pioneer generation like passion about it. That's it. I have three children, live outside of Jerusalem.
You know, thank platoon commander myself. The best job in the army.
Yeah, Yair and I, by the way, we discovered after I hired him that both me and him did exactly the same roles in the army to the point where like our CVs are identical. It's very bizarre.
It's very, very weird. We both of us got married at the same wedding hall, like different venue, different years
and apart. Different women.
Yeah, different.
She knows my wife. She can vouch for that. And both of us went to the same university, doing the same degree. So anyway, very weird coincidence. We never were this close until we worked.
Because I'm considerably older than Yael. A whole 3 years.
Four years.
The ICEJ has a long history with both of you and your families. Of course, Yair married the daughter of one of the founders of the ICEJ, and a beautiful redhead, and so he has beautiful redhead children.
Yeah, none of my kids look like me, thank God. You know, they all took all the genes from my wife.
Matty, and your family, your leaders there in the believing community in Jerusalem, and of course with Sarel, TBN Media, and all, we work with you very closely.
Can I say something about, again? You know, I don't talk about us still, you know, whatever. I want to commend the ICJ because you've been doing this for a long time. Jürgen's been a friend, Mary, you know, again, an amazing team of people. And I think looking back today, 2025, to some of the fruit of like what's been done through the education efforts of people in through the ICJ and others, but again, especially the ICJ, since we're sitting at your beautiful booth, a very strategic decision to educate leaders. And the effect of that, I've met many of these people because I've been in this business long enough, where you'll meet these repeat leaders and they'll tell you the same story. I didn't care about Israel. I knew nothing about it. It was something my parents did and I didn't know why. And then someone in ICJ or another organization said, listen, come to this conference. You have to hear about this. Or they watched a video or they attended, you know, a pastor's conference.
And that's changed their life.
And something clicked in their head.
People, yeah.
And then because they're in a leadership position, everyone that went under their hands for the rest of their life was affected by that, by a message of understanding what God's trying to do in that part of the world. And I think, again, since we're talking about content and leading people and changing their perception, that is anything anyone could ask for in life. It's affecting one person's enough, by the way. You've affected many. Affecting people so they can educate others and change the world's their worldview and perception to be closer to what God intended, to understand the biblical principles and connect that to reality. And if you've done that, and you've done that excessively and, you know, with excellence, that's an amazing feat.
Yeah, well, we've done our best. We've, you know, tried our best, but what's exciting for me is to see your generation stepping up to the plate and providing leadership and creativity and innovation and, you know, finding out what people are looking for, and you were right there on the spot. And that's what, you know, we all need. The world is changing so quickly, and we need your generation helping to keep us, you know, on the right platforms and
but it isn't. I think this is a problem that we have in this day and time, is we think that the world is changing. It's the media or the medium is changing.
Media, the communication. But
the truth remains the truth.
Right.
And I'd say what, you know, it's the, what is the word? The equation or the graph has become more extreme. People are more impatient. And as they become more impatient, there's an exact and opposite trend where they're much more interested in fully understanding the truth. So, and we'll do this, you know, people will say, okay, we want a 10-second soundbite. And those same people will say, but actually, I really want to know an hour long of like everything you can tell us about this. And they'll say, and the same goes for what you do. Some people say, well, I don't have any patience for this, but they don't have any patience for anything. And then other people will say, I want to know everything there ever was created about. Yeah. And what we do and what you've done is it gives them that tool of like searching the internet and, you know, online content to learn everything you can learn about a topic. And now they can be ambassadors because the content's available without doing a, you know, 5-year degree on the topic.
Right. And that we've put a lot of time and effort into building educational resources. So we have online courses, we have books, we have podcasts, study guides, you know, we have educational websites. I've built a college curriculum for a whole semester-long course. It's being used in 2 schools, and a third one's looking at it now. We'd love to make it known to all the schools. We just haven't had the staff time to put into that kind of networking.
Yeah.
We recognize that for the Generation Z, for the younger generations, we have to remember, go back to the basics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And start at the beginning again, because they don't have that. But after October the 7th, there is a heightened curiosity about Israel. They're like, what is it all about?
Yeah, listen, that's so it hit me, because I always thought there's wars everywhere in the world, and like more people are getting hurt in other places, but for some reason, Israel is always on the news. And why? Why is that? Why is there so much hatred for Israel? Why do Iran will invest all this money to create all these terror armies to battle Israel? We don't have natural resources. We don't have oil. We basically, it's a desert land, you know, with lots of problems. But for some reason, they want to invest all this money and effort to destroy the people of Israel. And then I realized this is a spiritual war. It doesn't make any other reasoning other than this is a spiritual war, and the enemy wants to destroy Israel. And why? He wants to destroy Israel because Israel, the people of Israel, are not special. Israel as a land is not special. It's only because God made a covenant to Israel. And he's faithful to the people of Israel. And because of that, he's faithful to each and every one of you. Back home, wherever you are, in whatever struggle you have. I mean, God is using Israel because he's a practical God. He knows we can't, you know, watch everything. So he focuses on Israel from the Bible times until today. And then, you know, if you have a problem in your life, a challenge or anything, you just look at Israel and say, okay, look at Israel. For millions of years, from the Egyptians to the Iranians now, and Hezbollah and Hamas and other Iranian militias and the Houthis, everybody wants to kill us, but they're still there. Why? Because God is faithful to them, so he will be faithful to us, to each and every one of us.
Amen. So, well, it's been great talking to you both, and I know our audience is going to love getting to know you a little bit better, and they'll have to look you up on TBN.
TBN Israel. TBN Israel, yeah.
And is that the name of your YouTube channel?
TBN Israel,
okay.
Yeah. So, you can also Google our names, you will most likely get there, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you all so much, and we'll be praying for you. Our audience will be praying for both of you now they know you a little bit better. Pray for your protection, and that God will use you in amazing ways.
And please pray for the family members of all the Israeli IDF soldiers that are fighting, because they're paying the highest toll of this war.
Yes. Yeah. Amen. Thank you all.
Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Out of Zion with Susan Michael. Be sure to subscribe to Out of Zion now on Apple Podcasts, cpnshows.com, YouTube, or wherever you like to listen and learn. Out of Zion with Susan Michael is a production of ICEJ USA, all rights reserved.